whether it's staring off at a TV screen, losing yourself in that small electronic device that contains Facebook and Twitter, and occasionally can be used also for a phone. That's the seldom used app on a phone is the phone. Whether it's gambling, a poker night, whether it's alcohol or a drug you don't consider a drug, we all have those things that we're doing too much for our own good use, for our own health. We all have those thoughts that we ruminate on that we can't seem to let go, that cling to us like a barb. That's part of our nature. There are many ways to relieve existential angst. And for all of us, in some way or another, addiction is an element of our lives. That's what I learned working at Beit Tshuva, the drug and alcohol rehab I worked at now a decade ago. Great internship. And you may say to yourself, well, everyone drinks this way. Or my dad used to talk about sex this way. Or all my uncles used to gamble. I had a big poker night, so it's normal to spend hundreds of dollars a week at the casino. Or everyone looks at Facebook. Everyone has a Facebook account. It's normal. I don't spend any more time than anyone else. We all have these stories we tell ourselves, these lies we tell ourselves, rationalizations. That's how we get through the day. As the Big Chill would say, try going a day without a rationalization. And we all have challenges brought on by our youth, brought on by our name and existence and character, brought on by trauma, brought on by grades, brought on by being passed over for promotions or being jealous of a colleague or a friend. We all have strife. That's the nature of life. And compounding that strife by wasting hours a day on Twitter, compounding that strife by having too much to drink so that you can sleep better, is another kind of sorrow. Our core narrative, our core experience, the central text, one might say, of Torah, the central image, is Egypt and redemption. God says in Exodus 6, I am God, I bring you out of from under the burdens of Egypt, I rescue you from slavery, I redeem you with an outstretched arm, with great judgments, I'll take you to me as a people and be your God. Know that I am God, your God, who brings you out from the burdens of Egypt. The Hebrew word for Egypt is Mitzrayim, or in Arabic, Masr. That's our narrative. As we talk on the Haggadah, starting from narrow places and achieving broadness of scope, starting from slavery and reaching redemption and liberation. Mitzrayim, that Hebrew word, you may have heard this, min ha-metzar, from the straits, from the narrow and constricted places, from the borders. That's who we are. Jews, non-Jews, Muslims, Mormons, Buddhists. We have constriction, not just in our arteries, but in our spirits. And we all tend to those things. We medicate those things, maybe with Percocet, maybe with extramarital affairs, maybe by ignoring our children, by all sorts of unhealthy and unproductive compulsions and obsessions. And the next phase in one's development, God willing that you reach this point, not everyone does. Some people are so trapped in their narrowness, they never are able to escape. People who are constitutionally unable, maybe, of telling the truth, is to go through the wilderness. It's funny, it's one of those metaphors that we've used so much, we forget where it comes from. But the majority of Torah, more or less three or four books of it, happens in wilderness, Bamidbar. And I was thinking this year a little bit. Bamidbar might be translated as in the wilderness, but prepositions in Hebrew are kind of fungible. They're kind of loose. Bamidbar could also be through the wilderness. That's the effort. To find our way through constriction, to be liberated over the course of a life, to be freed from obsessive thought, compulsive behavior, poor choices. It takes a lifetime. As Gilead said this morning about my talk last night on authenticity is not one and done. Authenticity is not something we achieve, but something we touch upon by moments. I think everything I'm talking to you about these holidays, leadership, accountability, authenticity, this talk is on specifically recovery, is something that you will have in brief epiphanies, in brief moments. Maybe they'll be more close together like a string of pearls glowing closer together with more and more pearls, but they'll never be continuous. That's okay. Maimonides says that that journey through the wilderness is vital. Maimonides notes that the theological evolution of our people required that journey, bamidbar, in the wilderness, through the wilderness, and out of it. Because, says Maimonides, divine wisdom arranged that they would wander around the wilderness till they became schooled in courage, since it's known that marching through wilderness under difficult physical conditions, deprived of normal comforts, hardens, strengthens. Trauma, vulnerability, suffering, effort, setbacks, and steps forward, two steps forward, one step back. That's the nature of this existence. That's the cycle we're in. And knowing that is the first step towards moving forward. If you think that trauma or sadness or evil are aberrations in life and you fight them, you're going to be harder off than if you just accept them and move through them. As I said at the very beginning of this morning about our fasting, we're here to inui nefesh, to afflict our souls, to force ourselves to a higher spiritual plane by fasting, by standing, by not bathing, by not wearing good shoes, by wearing white and ascribing to ourselves the qualities of angels. We drive ourselves through these difficulties to reach something new. And the question is, in life, what are you going to do with all that? What are you going to make of your difficulties? What are you going to learn in the wilderness? What are you going to get out of those setbacks? I wish everyone fewer character-building experiences, but they're going to be there. And are you going to have your character uplifted and built? The writer and philosopher Viktor Frankl says, I think in his writings on the Shoah, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom. Are you going to, this year, in ways big and small, avoid accountability and responsibility? Are you going to delay going to work just because you want to read another article on your phone? Are you going to postpone time with your kids because there's something on the computer you can't get away from? Are you going to miss out on romance with your wife because you're out gambling? Are you going to not be fully present because the painkillers that were prescribed 3 years ago for your knee are now just a regular part of your life? Are you going to miss out on a spiritual peak today because you can't get your mind off of someone attractive in the room? Obsessive thoughts, compulsive actions. You have the choice. It doesn't happen automatically. The moment between your child's yelling at you and you hitting them is still a moment. You still have a breath to change course. And you may have heard me tell this story before. It is one of my favorites, so you're going to hear it more than once if you stay here long enough. But there was this beautiful rabbi, Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon. I should say he wasn't beautiful. He was very coarse. He was known in various stories to be extremely big and strong. There's another rabbi like Resh Lakish, who was a brigand, a gladiator. And Lazar ben Shimon was just bulky and broad. And he worked, we think, maybe the description indicates he was like a stevedore. That's how I like to think of it. And he would organize the laborers and pack the animals and arrange for people at the docks to make their next progress, loading, so to speak, container ships on the gantry of his back. And one time, says Pesikta de Rav Kahana, one of our collections of Midrash, Elijah came to him. Some of your children were at Camp Nadav with me this summer, and we made a series of videos about the stories of Elijah, and this was one of them. Elijah came to him disguised as an old, rumpled, shrunken, shriveled man. And Elijah, I don't know if I can do the right voice, said to him, get a pack horse ready for me. Get a pack horse. And Lazar said to him, well, what's the load? What's the destination? And Elijah, disguised as this crusty old fellow, said, one worn bottle, presumably carrying his drink, this cloak, and the rider, which would be me. And Lazar says to him, you're just being ridiculous, old grandfather, using a term of endearment. I could pick you up myself and carry you as far as you want to go, to the ends of the earth even, and you say, get me a mount. What do you need a donkey? What do you need a horse? So what happened, says the Midrash? Lazar scooped up Elijah on his back and took him up mountains, down valleys, through farms of thorns and other farms of briars, the vicissitudes of life. And at last Elijah, through all that journey, used, I don't know, magic, wonder-working, to make him heavier and heavier and to make the load slip just a little. And Lazar says to him, grandfather, grandfather, make lightly, get yourself settled. If not, I'll throw you off. And Elijah said to him, they went on further, and Elijah started to weigh down and bear down and press down more. And finally, the scene was repeated a few times. And Elijah said to him, after all that exhaustion, he sort of perceived that this great and strong and giant of a man was wearing down. And Elijah said to him, would you like to rest? And Lazar says, yes. Maybe the first time he's rested in his life, running away from his father's teachings, his father's wisdom, running away from family to have a difficult job at the port. And so what happened? Elijah took him to a farm, sat him under a tree, like Siddhartha under the Bodhi tree, sat him down, gave him eat, food, and drink. And once they had that food and drink, Elijah said to him, where does all this roughness and hardness get you? Wouldn't it be better to learn the craft of your ancestors, the wisdom of the rabbis, which is to say? And Lazar said, yes. And as is the tradition in our family histories, we prize wisdom over strength, that once Lazar learned, he became, if not enfeebled, then smaller. And Elijah spent 13 years teaching him one of our most sacred texts, the Sifre. And once Lazar could recite the Sifre, he could no longer lift the coat. I told that story, I think at my very first Kol Nidre here, and I told that story a few years before at Beit Shuva, that Jewish drug and alcohol rehab, to one of my favorite clients who is still sober and married and acting, not acting as a person, but in theater. And Luke knew that story. Luke knew the story of being oppressed and weighed upon by obsessive thoughts and compulsive actions, and for him it was hydrocodone. For you, again, could be your favorite news site. Could be a woman who isn't your wife. Could be a medicine that you no longer should be taking. Could be anything else, even exercising too much. Putting down that weight is one of the hardest tasks of life. And as I said, it's not one and done. Like authenticity, as Gilia noted this morning, it's every day. It's every day stopping ourselves when we get in the circle, the cycle, the bubble. It's every day relieving that obsession. It's every day stopping those compulsions. It's every day changing our behaviors and thought patterns, and sometimes outside in, from behavior to thought pattern, to help ourselves to create the space, frankly, for us to become the person that God is calling us to be. In drug and alcohol rehabilitation, we call that space recovery. And one of the senior people at the house used to say that if you're not in recovery, you're just in denial. And recovery is the process that Lazar went through, that Luke went through, that we all, at our best moments, go through, of letting go of the things that no longer serve us. Habits that might have worked when we were 12, but are really poor defenses now. And by letting go, we can begin to be transformed. We can begin, as the psalmist said, and I think Bob Marley used this in a song, "The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone." You may feel in your history of trauma or grief or depression or joy or meanness or arrogance or anger or frustration or, best of all, resentment, that you were the one rejected. Now it's all up to you. As adults, now we're the ones accountable. It's no longer mom and dad who didn't love us or hug us enough. It's no longer teachers who didn't give us the grade we deserve. It's no longer rabbis who were unkind to us and pushed us away. It's us. We own it. We are the stone. And you can remain the rejected stone, or you can become the cornerstone. And I want to leave you with a tradition, not a Jewish tradition, but a 12-step tradition. And frankly, many rabbis have looked at the patterns between the process of atonement and the process of 12-step recovery, and they're quite well aligned. They synthesize quite well. But the prayer that happens at the end of every 12-step meeting, or every one I've ever sat in on, is called the promises. And I want to offer them to you, not necessarily from a 12-step perspective, but as Jews, as people in our community, as human beings who wish to grow and become. That if you can find your way through the nettle and the thorns and the briars and the mountains and the valleys of compulsion, obsession, addiction, frustration, poor defensive behaviors, you might win these things, as Lazar won them from Elijah. So say the promises. If we are painstaking about this development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom, new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Feelings of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for ourselves what we could not do for ourselves, doing for us. Wouldn't that be nice? To be free from fear, to be unlimited and untethered to the past, to be free from uselessness and self-pity, to intuitively know the answers to questions that baffle us. What I haven't given you is a roadmap. Sadly, there isn't one. For some, it will be a 12-step group, AA, NA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Weight Watchers. For some, it might be psychotherapeutic approaches or medical approaches. For some, as I mentioned last night, a spiritual director can help. For some, talking to your pastor can help if you have a good one. That was a joke. That was a little bit tongue-in-cheek. For others, it's talking to friends. For others, it's journaling or praying out loud in your car, praying on your bed, meditation, long walks. But whatever it takes to help you break the chains, that's what life requires. And what I'm going to tell you now, I'm looking around this room, some people in their 20s, some in their teens, some in their 80s, it's never too late. And the worst thing you can do with any moment of your life is give up and think you are too far gone. There's a mitzvah that if you miss Pesach, if you miss the Passover, if you weren't able to sacrifice the Paschal lamb, which was how it was done in the biblical times, but presumably this is also true if, God forbid, you miss the Seder, a month later you're offered the opportunity for the second Passover to sacrifice the lamb then. Rafe participated in this, not the sacrifice, but the Seder. You can still do the Seder, the sacrifice up in Nablus with the Samaritans. So what's the point of that, aside from convenience? I mean, what if you just wanted to go to a ball game at the first Seder? You could really take advantage of that. But it says the second to last of the Lubavitch dynasty, the point of the second Pesach, the second Passover, is this. It's never too late. There's always a second chance. No matter how far you've gone, no matter how far you've strayed, no matter how much you've built up muscles that don't serve you, now is the time, within and without, metaphorically, and maybe even literally, to find your Elijah, who will help you let go of your burdens and help you find a way forward for the rest of your life that will be better than the past of your life.